right, welcome back to the big program. Keep those texts coming in. 1-833-401-1440. Love the fire. Love the passion. Tub Guy says, I've got your back, KK. We sit at the game last night. That should have counted. Go Oilers, go. And then your buddy Nails Duke. What if it hit his ass after Nurse levels him and his arse is above the crossbar? If it isn't intentionally redirected, it should count. Kevin, you are correct. I love everyone coming at me and not coming at me, and this is just awesome. Time now for On the Mark, brought to you by and fueled by Booster Juice. Visit a Booster Juice today to try the new strawberry blush smoothie. Sip, blush, and savor as you fall in love with this new flavor, only at Booster Juice, as we welcome in Mark Spector from Rogers Sportsnet. Good morning, Spec. 1-0 Oilers, 7-4 victory.
What's going on, man?
Hey?
What's going on?
Oh, man, we're fired up this morning. Everyone's jacked after a big win, I assume.
Yeah, well, good. It's good for the city, good for the town, bad for Specs sleeping hours.
That was a tough day for you yesterday, wasn't it?
Well, it's not as much. I mean, it's just late. Normally on an 8 o'clock start, you get out of there around, you know, I try to file by midnight, but with the playoffs in, it's a different process for interviews after the game, and it takes longer, so I'm walking out of the rink at 1:45, and you can't get sleep right away.
No.
And here it is, 8 o'clock, buddy. So good thing I'm young and healthy and spry,
yeah,
to be able to do this stuff.
You're just a temple, that body. I mean,
yeah,
let's be honest.
Body's a temple, baby.
You know, the stat sheet, if you looked at it by the end of the night, you'd go, oh, it's sort of even Steven. But the Connor McDavid line totally dominated the Deneau line in the head-to-head. Yesterday, especially in the first first 30 minutes and then some. To me, that was one of the key parts of the game. What else caught your eye last night?
Well, that's a huge part of it, because in the past two series, Deneau's done a pretty good job on McDavid. And if they can't, the problem here is Deneau's getting older and McDavid's getting better. So those two trends are going in the wrong direction for the Kings. The score was not indicative of that game. It ended 7-4. I'd say it was more of about a 6-2 game. You know, the Kings were never close. They scraped to within two a couple times, and the Oilers quickly scored to make it three again. This was a clinic on how you don't play when you're playing the Oilers. The Kings.
I might need headphones, Duke.
Everything that the Kings thought they were wanted to do, they didn't do, and they just walked right into a blowout win in Edmonton. They'll be a way better team in Game 2, and if they're not, this will be a mighty short series.
I just got to get a set of headphones here, so I just missed your last part. Anything else catch your eye? I'm just trying to get some headphones so I can hear you, yeah, so go ahead.
That's okay. You know, I mean, you win the key battles here. Who had the better goalie, right? Edmonton. Who had the better special teams? Edmonton. You know, who scored first, which is a pretty important thing against the Kings? Edmonton. Who, in a game between two really divergent styles, like, I think one of the biggest things is when you play LA, they're trying to play the game their way with their style. They're trying to slow it down. They're trying to, you know, they want the game played at their tempo, and it's always a battle for how we're going to play the game. And, you know, how was that game played? That game was played at a lightning fast pace. The Oilers were, frankly, carrying it through the neutral zone a lot more than LA wants them to.
Mm-hmm.
So they won that part of that battle as well. So, I mean, there just isn't an area that LA won in that game, and that's why it was such a blowout. I don't expect to see that time after time. But last night, I mean, every element of that game that the Oilers wanted to win, they won.
Yeah.
The Kings got to be way better.
And I think
game two.
I think they will. What did you make of the Oilers? I mean, first of all, the lack of discipline by the penalties that the LA Kings took. And I mean, the Oilers just ran that power play right down their throat, 3-for-4.
Yeah, they did. That's another one. Two, you know, they took four penalties. The Oilers went 3-for-4. Two of them were dumb penalties.
Yeah.
You know, Dubois on McDavid. I mean, they already pushed McDavid around at the bench, and he comes in for a second shot.
Yeah.
The ref's going to call it the second. You know, he gave him one shot in McDavid. Then a new guy comes in, gives him another shot. You're getting that penalty. I would think that player safety, well, I'm guarantee you player safety has looked at the Moore hit on Desharnais. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're doing anything about it, but I hated that. I don't like that hit one. You come in low and you hit a guy in the side of the knee like that.
Mm-hmm.
Moore's a really good player. I like Moore a ton, but that was a crappy hit that could have blown out a guy's knee. I don't know what's he thinking. Like, he got down extra low and hit him in the side of the knee. I hate that hit.
We had a lot of texts coming in here, comparing the Archibald hit to Stanley a few years back.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw a picture of it. It's the same hit. So who knows? I mean, I'm not coming on the show here trying to predict what player safety is going to do, but I hated that hit. I don't know why Moore's throwing it.
Yeah, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, early on in the game, it's still scoreless. Oilers lost a draw, and Stu Skinner came up with it was such early part of the game that people probably forgot about it, but he came up with a big save early on. It was off the draw of Kevin Fiala. Other than that, you know, he made the big save on Arvidsson, and that was a critical part of the game because the Oilers made it 3-0 just seconds after that. I don't recall, you know, two goals off skates, a broken stick. You know, Stu Skinner, though, was really, really good last night, I thought.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, he's had a lot of those games this year where he does some really good work early, and then the Oilers take it and go away and win by a few, and we're talking about all the guys who got all the points. It would have been a different game if he didn't make, you know, if LA scores first, it's a different game. That's the way they play.
Mm-hmm.
The turning point on the night is Arvidsson getting stopped in a breakaway and the puck going into the other end seconds later. That's a turning point in the game right there. So, you know, Skinner stopped everything he had to stop. The only guys he couldn't stop were his own players. So, you know, on an unlucky night, he lets in one that's a real goal, and then the other, you know, he had no chance when CC's stick broke, and the other two go get kicked in his own net. So that's a pretty good night for Skinner. He doesn't have the numbers to show it, but, you know, again, who wins the goaltending battle last night? 100% Skinner's better than Talbot.
We'll be asking Grant Fuhr this at 9 o'clock when he comes on to co-host, but do you think we might see David Rittich for game two?
Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to give Cam Talbot a chance. If I'm coaching LA, I'm going to give Cam Talbot a chance to play behind a better team. His team let him down. Like, I'm not sure any goalie's stealing that game last night. You know, Nugent Hopkins taps one in empty net. Hyman taps two into empty nets. I didn't like the Henrik goal, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Draisaitl from his office. I mean, there's a bunch of goals that I'm not blaming Talbot on. If the Kings come out and play a lot better and they get out goaltended again, I'm going to think about it for game three. But, you know, it reminds me of Skinner in the first 14 games of the year. He wasn't any good. Why was that? Because the team in front of him was garbage.
Yeah, stunk.
So same with last night with Talbot and the Kings.
Fair assessment. Mark Spector with us on Sports 1440. You know, for someone to play left wing on Connor McDavid, we've seen guys come and go. You can go back to Patty Maroon and guys like that. Nuge has been up there. Well, suddenly you have a very cerebral player like Adam Henrik, and he seems to be fitting in very, very nicely there.
Yeah, he does, and he's the right. Maybe he's the, you know. It's funny, like when we talk about Crosby back. I always go to Crosby on this question, but, you know, they ran a million guys through there, and a couple of his best wingers ever were guys like Max Talbot and Pascal Dupuis and Chris Kunitz. You know, none of those guys are superstars, but they were all really smart and figured out how to do the job and be a valuable winger. I mean, Zach Hyman, look at him.
Yeah.
You know, 57 goals now this year, regular season and playoffs. And maybe Henrik's just, I know he's smart. Like, he's a smart player. He can figure it out. You can play him anywhere. He can be center. He can be winger. He can check. He can score. Maybe they stumbled on. I'll tell you right now, they didn't acquire Adam Henrik at the deadline to play with Connor McDavid. I guarantee you that.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they stumble onto something here, and who knows? If you're going to win in the playoffs, Kev, there's always some magic and some revelations and some guys who do things you didn't think they could do, and maybe this is just the first one.
Mm-hmm. You were touching on Vinny Desharnais and with the low bridge hit, from Moore, but you know, Vinny looked pretty good in his, you know, really coming out party this year. It's been like that for some time now. Just your thoughts on the big D-man playing last night.
Yeah, and you know, everyone blocks shots in playoffs. You got to have shot blockers in playoffs. I don't know how many he blocked last night, but he blocked a share. So that's the first thing. He's a courageous shot blocker, and in the playoffs, can't replace those guys. He's turned into a good player. Like, he's turned in, he showed up as, remember Broberg? It was his job to lose in training camp. Well, Desharnais made him lose that job because Desharnais went out and took it. And now we're 82 games later, and Desharnais, he came in as maybe a number six on a good team. Now he is absolutely a third pairing defenseman on a good team. He could be a third pairing defenseman on any team in this league. I'm here to tell you. So huge steps for him. And wait till we're talking about him. If the Oilers are still playing a month and a half from now, boy, this is the kind of guy, and this is the season for that kind of guy, that if the Oilers take a long run and he turns UFA after, someone's probably going to overpay for him. Mm-hmm. And I doubt it would be Edmonton. As much as they love him and they want him, they can't have third pairing defensemen making what he could possibly make if they go on a run here.
Five block shots for Vinny Desharnais last night. He also had six hits. You know, I thought the hit total, it was very physical. It was physical at the start of the game. Yep. Wasn't as physical maybe as the game wore on. That's game script. But, I mean, LA was credited with 70 hits, the Oilers 47. Your thoughts on Evander Kane last night?
He was pretty good. Yep. You know, when the game started and they had him in the third line and Holloway in the fourth, I thought, okay, this is where a coach says, if Kane's not going good, Holloway's going to flip up to that line. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought we might see. But Kane was going good. He skated well. I didn't look at his stats line after. I don't know if he had how many hits he had or whatever, but that line was good. They buzzed. He must have had four or five shots on net. Him and Perry are working well together. I notice that Kane's getting better at playing Perry's game, where they can cycle and hold the puck on the ozone a little bit more. Remember we saw that video of Perry giving it to Kane on the bench. I think the offshoot of that was, quit giving the puck away when we're cycling. Just hang on to it and make a smart play. And I see Kane making that smart play. So I, third line left winger, played great for me. How about you?
Yeah, and there was a time in the second period where the two of them flip-flopped. Holloway and Kane did flip-flop from line three to line number four, and Kane saw some time on the fourth line. He had six shots on goal and two hits. So he was involved, played 16 minutes. And, I mean, you know, Holloway's numbers came down, but still played 944. It's not too bad. All things considered, and one of the reasons why is because the Oilers stayed out of the penalty box, only took two penalties. So I would just say more of the same for tomorrow's spec, but I think we'll see a much better LA Kings team.
Well, you're going to be. This is, you know, a lot of that night was a little easier for the Oilers because they had a big lead and the crowd was on their side and there wasn't, you know, the other guys were 2-3 goals down, so there wasn't a ton of stress. That all changes very likely. Mm-hmm. LA is going to give you everything they got in game two. This is how series work, man. The pressure's on LA to not go down 2-0. They're going to give you everything they have. This is a game where you'll see the Oilers against a very stern opponent. Mm-hmm. And frankly, if you win it, LA is going to have to look in the mirror and go, oh boy, I'll bet you they'll say to themselves, we just played one of our best games and lost, and that's a problem. Yeah. So you can really put the fire out tomorrow if you beat LA in a game in which they're bringing everything they got. If that's not enough tomorrow for LA, they're going to start to wonder if they have enough.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Spec, thanks for this. We'll see you down at the rink later this afternoon. Thanks, big fella.
All right. Sounds good, buddy.
That's Mark Spector on the mark. Energized by Booster Juice. Get the boost you need at Booster Juice. When we come back, Frank Saravalli from the Daily Faceoff. That's coming up on the Kevin Carius Show. So glad you're with us on a Tuesday morning. We're back right after the break. All right, welcome back to the big program. Time now for the headliner of the day, brought to you by Mr. Rooter Plumbing. Getting snakes deep and giving 110% day in and day out. For all your plumbing needs, go to MrRooter.ca as we welcome in Frank Saravalli from the Daily Faceoff. Good morning, Frank. How's the West Coast treating you?
It's beautiful this morning.
Is it?
Perfect sunrise here in Vancouver.
Hmm.
What a place to be.
What, I mean, like, you're just busy. I see you're going to the bars. You're buying everyone rounds. Is that what's going on out there?
So you'll enjoy this story. Yeah. So we have an event last night at Greta Bar here in Vancouver. Just a little watch along Q&A. Walk into the bar, absolutely packed with Oiler fans.
Really?
So I start chatting with them, and they're here. They're all Edmonton firefighters, and they're here for an adult hockey tournament.
Oh, cool.
So they go, this is our little 5-day bender that we have out here with our buddies, and yeah, they found a place to watch the game, and it just happened to be the home of Oilers Nation.
Oh, that's such a cool story. And I bet the what was the atmosphere like in there with the Oiler game?
It was great. Yeah. Like, sound up loud, and the guys were into it, and had some people stop by, so it was awesome.
Oh, good stuff. What's the feeling out just in Vancouver with the Canucks, you know, coming back to win game number one over Nashville? Set the stage. What's the atmosphere like in Van?
I think a big sigh of relief. I mean, look, the team was down heading into the third period, probably hadn't played exactly the way that they wanted to, and to get on the board, to feel confident, I think is hugely important. I mean, think about the inverse of what Vancouver's like. Yeah. This is a market that kind of feels like at times it implodes on itself. And so to get that one on the board, probably pretty significant for the Canucks, and to now feel pretty confident heading into game two, I think they're in a good spot.
Mm-hmm. Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff with us on Sports 1440. Yesterday, you sent the Twix out regarding Mark Stone and the Vegas Golden Knights. What are your thoughts on that yesterday and a day later after Stone scores a goal in the Vegas 4-3 win?
Yeah, I mean, who else was going to be scoring the first goal of the game last night but Mark Stone? I mean, you could have written it 3 weeks ago, it feels like.
Yeah.
It is quite a pattern, and I truly believe, and this is my opinion only, technically the Vegas Golden Knights are not breaking any rules. Mark Stone is healthy. There is no salary cap in the playoffs. He's eligible to be activated off of LTIR because they have no reason not to, and he plays. So park that for 1 second. I still think this is a significant competitive integrity issue for the NHL.
Yeah.
This is 3 years in a row that a player is injured in mid-February that just happens to make it back for round one of the playoffs. And when you can take $9.5 million off of your cap and spend it, and you have the ability to park certain players on your roster at this time of year, it's an advantage that no one else has.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it significantly tips the scales. And, you know, perhaps not shockingly, the Vegas Golden Knights, defending cup champs, get the heartbeat of their team back in game one, and on the road as the 8 seed, beat the number one team in the West to open up their series.
Mm-hmm.
It's look, I can tell you that in talking to people around the league yesterday, there are managers and there are team executives that are very unhappy, but they've also called the Vegas Golden Knights essentially on the carpet before at general managers meetings, and then more or less tabled what to do next. And until there's significant action from the general managers, which would then need to prompt the NHL to engage in bargaining with the NHL Players Association, nothing's going to change.
I like your word pattern there, Frank, and that's what it is. You know, the feeling here, and I think this is from all Oiler fans, is that, you know, everyone in town here is glad that it's someone else's problem here for the first two rounds.
Well, you know, the Oilers ended up in a great spot on, you know, with Vegas being in another bracket.
Yes, that's what I'm saying here. So
if you take advantage, if you're the Oilers, of your path, which I think is probably about as solid as a path as you could ask for.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I watch a game like last night and say, so critically important for Edmonton to get off to the start that they did. It was exactly what I had mentioned to you last week about, hey, will this team show us if they've learned any lessons?
Mm-hmm.
Right out of the gate last night, McDavid, video game mode. Hyman doing his thing in front of the net. Stuart Skinner coming up with some big saves. Everything that you need, all the ingredients to show not only that your team is on another level than the LA Kings, but that you're going to try and make as quick work of this as possible and not let this team hang around.
Mm-hmm. So you, as you said, you mentioned and you talked to GMs, because it's Dallas and they, you know, were a game or two away from the President's Trophy and now are just three games from being eliminated in the first round by a team that is, again, as you say, not breaking any rules. But will there be something done a little bit more because this is a team like Dallas that could be facing elimination by a team that Vegas is doing what it is?
I mean, there's not going to be any more unless someone actually steps up to do something. And then this is a collective bargaining issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that even if they wanted to, the NHL could unilaterally decide on their own.
Yeah,
they're going to need to give something up to the players in order to change the language of this rule.
Yeah. Frank Saravalli with us on Sports 1440. Around the league, Frank, man, oh man, the Islanders thought that they were going to be going back to Long Island, tied at one, and then boom, 5-3, Carolina wins it. That's sometimes you can't rebound from losses like that, but you never know. Having said that, Carolina in the driver's seat after that big come from behind victory last night.
I don't know which one's worse for the Islanders. Game one, in which you significantly outplayed Carolina and still lost, or game two where you were outplayed and had a chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
They both hurt. I think the makings of both those result in a short series. I had Carolina to sweep. Now they go on the road. It's not like Long Island's going to be a scary place to play. And I think they're in a spot where if they play their cards right, in what's been a really odd series for the Canes, because they didn't really look great until the second half of yesterday's game, then they're going to be in a fine spot.
Mm-hmm. Toronto Maple Leafs needed a big-time game from their big-time player. They got that last night with Austin Matthews to even that series at one.
Oh, the hands. That goal was ridiculous. Look, it's really simple. It's a math equation for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Jason Gregor and I were talking about this yesterday on the DFO rundown. 52 games now that the Toronto Maple Leafs have played in the Austin Matthews era.
Mm-hmm.
52 playoff games. Heading into last night, they had scored two or fewer in half of those games. I mean, the recipe is simple.
Yeah.
Score and win. How does a team with that much firepower, that much spent on their cap table, a team that finished second in the league in offense this season, struggle to score? And they needed to get over the hump last night in game two to even the series. Got to put three on the board.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not putting three on the board, you're not going to win. It's as simple as that. At least three.
What did you think of the change in goaltender by Jim Montgomery for Boston?
I think it's fascinating. I think this is a team that's been their MO and part of their success the last few years. Is the tandem, the strength of the tandem. It's not just one guy, but no one's ever really done this. No one's gone into a playoff saying, you know what? We're going to rotate. This is our plan. Even teams that have ended up splitting the workload, like I think of the two Pittsburgh Penguins back-to-back wins, Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury, both those times were due to injury and or poor play.
Yeah.
One guy got yanked and ceded ground to the other, and then the other just ran with it. In this case, Montgomery was roundly criticized last year for not making the change earlier in the series. Now they do it, and I guess some people will want to be critical of that. I like it because that's the way they've played all year, and I don't see any reason to change it. But that also doesn't mean that it's guaranteed to work.
Mm-hmm. Winnipeg and Colorado, Frank. I think anyone would say we didn't expect to see 13 goals in the first game. And if you were the Avalanche and said, we're going to score six on Connor Hellebuyck in game one, we're probably going to win the game, or good chance anyway. Do you see things tightening up a lot in this series?
Well, I would expect to, just because Winnipeg was, you know, the best defensive team in the league this year, allowed the fewest goals, and that at some point that would swing toward the Jets' favor. There's a lot of things that I don't like about the game, even though the Avs doubled up the shot attempts and shots. on the Jets, 46 shots on goal. And as you mentioned, six past Hellebuck and you still don't win. It was way more than that for me. I didn't like the body language. When you watch the Avs players, they really seem to sag after Georgiev allows goals.
Yep.
And that to me, I'm not in the room, so I can't ask the question, but it looks to me like a team that doesn't really trust its goalie. And after this season and his numbers, I mean, hard to argue that. And it also looks like he doesn't trust the guys in front of him to defend properly. And in a potentially short seven-game series, that's could be a lethal combination.
You know, I've been told by people that are in the know that the Avalanche have gone on record saying we will outscore our problems. That's a big, big risk to take come playoff time.
It's the wrong team to try and do it against. And that's why I was saying before this series started that I think that this is the perfect matchup for Winnipeg because they're willing to let Colorado run around like crazy. They think they can defend better and their goalie will prevail in the end and they'll be opportunistic enough with what Colorado gives up.
I just want to circle back to the Oilers game last night. Texters coming in with queries regarding the hit on Vinny Desharnais from Trevor Moore. They bring up a couple of years ago with Josh Archibald and Dylan Stanley received a 2-game suspension, I believe. Is this suspendable or do you just see a fine?
I would think it's probably more toward a fine. I definitely don't like how Trevor Moore drops his body. But I think the end result, we'll see.
Do you think if Vinny doesn't finish the game, then it's a suspension?
Yeah, if there's an injury on the play, I think that certainly probably heightens the awareness.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about that. And just got to get back regarding Stone, and I don't recall this. This is a text coming in. I just want to clarify a couple things here. So this comes from a freezer bag text. You might have done this on the Daily Faceoff. It says, Frank said that Stone was seriously hurt and said that people, or he ridiculed people for saying otherwise. Can you clarify how that was going back to, you know, a month ago or whatever regarding Stone?
Well, I wasn't ridiculing. I was just saying that the reason he was going on LTIR at the time, an authentic, legitimate, significant injury. My issue now is that the timeline is just too perfect.
Yeah.
To be all of a sudden waltzing out of the dressing room for practice 1 week before the playoffs begin, and magically he's cleared 2 days before the playoffs begin, that's some incredible healing powers. It's not that he's healed. We knew he would be at some point. But my point that I would make in return is if he's healthy enough to play game one, then he was healthy enough to play game 82 and 81 and probably 80.
Yeah.
But they couldn't activate him because they didn't have the cap space to do so.
Right.
So they game the system and wait until there is no cap and then put him in.
Where are you at tonight, Frank, in Van?
I'll be at the game tonight.
Oh, you're going right to the game. Okay. Well, I thought maybe you were at Greta. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to keep track of you, man.
I'll be at the game.
Hard to keep track of you.
Yeah, well, hey, look, games are important.
Yeah. Hey, I really enjoyed, I enjoyed the whiteout, Sunday, and then I enjoyed when the Canucks came out to U2. Where do you rank, that's one of the best parts of the playoffs. The very first couple of minutes when teams are coming out skating on the ice. Where do you rank, some of the places, and how would you rank Van, Winnipeg, and maybe even here the last time you were here? I don't know.
Well, I'd say, and this is not me pandering to the market, no one really does the playoffs like Edmonton. The watch party outside. Yeah. They can fill the street in Winnipeg. Usually it takes a round or two to get there in Winnipeg. Edmonton, it's right off the hop.
Yeah.
And just what I love is how the intensity ratchets up from game 82 or 80 to the playoffs. It's a whole different viewing experience when you're in the building. And I can't imagine what it must be like to be a player and be in that dressing room and hear the crowd and feel the building shake before you even go out. Yeah. I mean, it sends chills up your spine thinking about it. And it's first time in 9 years here in Vancouver on Sunday night. I mean, that's as special as it gets.
Yeah. Hey, have you got time for one more, Frank?
Sure.
Okay.
For you, anything.
Oh, thanks, big guy. So I've been getting lambasted. We were talking about the disallowed goal by Trevor Lewis last night. So I felt it was a goal. Rob Brown from Oilers 630 Ched Radio Network, he is saying it's a goal. I would say, because it's a goal against the Oilers that was, you know, disallowed, 95% of our listeners and texters say it should have been no goal. Where do you stand on that play? Was it a goal? No goal? Is it clear as mud? What do you think?
Oh, I think it's no goal. I think the call was correct. Okay. Whether or not he meant to, he clearly directs the puck down with his glove. And I guess you could maybe make the argument, if you were watching baseball, did the end of his bat hit the ball, and is it a foul ball? Or but that's not what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
Glove coming down appears to hit the puck, clearly redirects it. Whether he was falling backward or not, and again, whether he intended to or not, doesn't really make a difference. And it's a clear no goal in my view. And by the way, maybe the most unheralded part of the whole thing was Trevor Lewis's reaction on the bench.
Yeah.
Because that was outstanding.
That was good. I'm going to agree to disagree. I think it's a goal. And
Why?
Because I don't think, if you look at the exact rule, so if you look at the exact rule and what it says, I'm going to pull it up here, the exact rule. Sorry, Frank. I'm just going to take me 1 second to pull it up.
So are you referencing the intent with hand contact?
Yeah. So the rule, so when the puck has been directed, battered, or thrown into the net by an attacking player other than with his stick, when this occurs, is deemed to be done deliberately. So I still think that it wasn't done deliberately. I think if he's facing more towards the net and not, like, you know, basically his back is towards the net, so it's going off his glove.
He's viewing the direction of where the puck is coming from.
So how can he physically bat it towards the net?
Well, look at the angle of his glove and how it perfectly matches up with the puck.
I think we'll agree to disagree.
Is it just an accident?
No, I think it's a goal. I'm glad it wasn't a goal for Oilers fans.
He's lowering his hand at the exact time that the puck, like, it looks like he's trying to knock it in.
Yeah. I love it. And you should see our text line. It's great, Frank. Hey, thanks for this, buddy. We'll talk to you on Thursday. Enjoy the game tonight. When are you going back to Philly, or what's the next stop on the Frank tour?
I'm going from Van to Nashville, so I'll be on this Canucks series the whole time.
Good stuff. I'll stay at a Tootsie's.
Getting body bagged across the continent.
Oh, man. It's going to be a great trip. Appreciate it, Frank. Thanks, bud.
See you, Kevin.
All right. That's Frank Saravalli, the Daily Faceoff, and our headliner of the day, brought to you by Mr. Reuter, your top defense pairing against leaks. That's MrReuter.ca. When we come back, maybe a little more Oilers sound. Obviously, now the text line is blown up again. Goal or no goal? It's not a big deal. It's my opinion. It's Brownie's opinion. It's Frank's opinion. It's your opinion. It probably didn't have a big bearing on the outcome of the game. But love your passion. Love your texts. Keep firing them in. 1-833-401-1440. We're back after the break on the Kevin Carey Show. Stay with us. Boy, this has been great. I love this text line this morning, Duke. Ivan says, hey, you ever make a sand castle, Kev? Who shovels sand forward? Maintenance man, your explanation doesn't make sense. Any tip that is intentionally done, the player is facing the puck. Having his back to the shooter would have made it accidental. So is he on my side or not? I don't know.
No, he's against you. Like the vast majority of people are, you have a bit of support here in the text line. I'll be honest, it's more than I would have
Bryce says, hey, I agree with KK. I don't think Lewis meant to do it, as he was in a battle in the front of the net as it was deflected.
Shout out Bryce, listening from Delburn AB.
Is he? Attaboy, Bryce. Yeah. I'm surprised he's not on your side.
Message me in the group chat asking what I had to say about it. And I said, I already said, I thought it was the right call. I'm team Frank, not team Kevin.
Yeah. Hey, I'm glad it wasn't a goal. Let's be honest.
Me too. I had Oilers puck line. Actually, I will say a couple things on the note of the other sports bettors out there. The Carolina Hurricanes, we've talked a little bit about, you talked about it with Frank, the, you know, incredible feat and blow to the Islanders. But the Hurricanes covered 1.5 goals in that game in which they were losing with only a couple minutes left to play.
Yeah.
So that was what we in the biz like to call a nice little backdoor cover for the Carolina team.
Maddie C says, I don't even smoke, but I could have used a dart after McDavid's spinorama.
Well, which one?
Well, the one on Mikey Anderson, I think. Yeah. And Mikey Anderson, his neck would have been sore from McDavid last night, spinning around, going around. Doughty and Mikey Anderson had a tough time, defending that top line. I'm cool with different opinions, but can you explain why that's a goal? Again, well, if you look at it, he's not in. It's a discretionary call. First of all, this is a.
Yes.
There's without question. This is a discretionary call made by Toronto.
Yeah, this isn't a. It's black and white. The puck crossed the line, something like that. And because the previous text from a perplexed Oilers fan here that just asked that said it hit his glove. How could it be a goal? It can hit a glove and go in if it is not an intentional redirection.
Like so. Also, I believe it hit. The replay from Bally's, not from Sportsnet, the replay from Bally's, I believe, and it doesn't matter, but it hits Stuart Skinner's stick as well once it hits the ice. So it hits the ice, and then it's almost like it's almost like the magic loogie from Seinfeld here. Like it bounces off the ice, then it hits the stick, then it goes through his legs. Walter, you know what? Had it with that already. So not a big deal that you need to ask everyone what their opinion is. Got it. The hand movement was absolutely deliberate. And Walter, apparently not a fan of Rod Brown. I texted Brownie this morning. And I respect Rod Brown to death. His insight, the way he sees the game, he could be an analyst anywhere he wanted to be. He sees the game that well. Rod Brown is like a Ray Ferraro. And Ray Ferraro sees the game just as good, if not better, than anyone. That's hands down. Some guys have it. Some guys don't. I don't have it. Rob Brown has it. I can only tell you our discussion on the text line and our discussion how he deals and Reed Wilkins deals with listeners, texters, etc. after the game, after games. It's the same as what we have to deal with here. I love the passion. It's great that you are being a part of the show. And yes, it's awesome that you have an opinion on it. I think it's outstanding. Here. Hey, Mossy. Thanks, Mossy. I was at the game. I thought it was a goal. Thanks, Mossy. Thank G, it wasn't. Tommy T says, great show. It was close. I agree. It could have went either way. Thanks, Tommy T. And again, everyone has their right, their opinion. I really do believe, though, if it's the other way around. And we did have a texter saying, was that Doug? I can't remember. Saying, if that would have happened to Zach Hyman, it should have been no goal as well. But do you honestly believe, Duke, that the Oilers fan base, if this were the other way around, how would the Oilers fan base react today?
I've been on record several times saying that I do believe that there is a good portion of Oilers fan base, and there's not anything wrong with, and this isn't a slight, I'm not an insult when I say it, that they can be a little disillusioned at times. It's because of how passionate they are. You look at your team through a biased lens, and that's perfectly fine.
Yep.
But how many times this year did Zach Hyman score a goal that was disallowed? And yes, some of them we kind of shrug our shoulders and say, we just don't know the rules, or it's not clear. But sometimes Oilers fans will still argue that should have counted just because it is Zach Hyman doing his work in front of the net. By the rule of the law, it is not a goal.
And the number one goal was he didn't score it. Ryan Nugent Hopkins scored it. Hyman cruised through the crease. Bennington just slid by. And Bennington's reaction, right? You saw Bennington's reaction. He thought it was a good goal. And then what happened? No goal. And we had just as many texts that next day. That should have been a goal. Should have been a goal. Should have been a goal. And I agree. Bearcat, enough already. Change the subject, please. We will. Do you want to do some sound here? Or we should just probably yik yak. I think you know what we should do, Duke. We should mention the NBA last night because some great games.
Yeah.
And, you know, you touched on it. I think we had just the discussion there a little bit with Jamal Murray And I think it was in your update, in the update.
Mm-hmm.
So when he, that's the first Canadian for a buzzer beater.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't get the friendly rim roll, but all I saw was Kawhi Leonard. Did you not feel the... He's falling back into the fadeaway.
It was just a two, not a, a corner three. And obviously the stakes in this game, too, a little bit lower. But, I mean, it was poetry in motion. That was a great game. I kind of had that on the secondary screen in the laptop throughout the course of the evening. Earlier, I was watching the Knicks-Sixers game as well, which that had its incredible finish in its own right. So a pair of really good games, and not to take anything away from Cleveland-Orlando, but not quite the same the closeness. Knicks, yeah, like the Knicks two threes in such short sequence, one from Brunson, one from DiVincenzo, and it's funny because the Sixers, it was shaping up so well for them. Tyrese Maxey was questionable to going into that game, their second best player by a pretty wide margin after, of course, Joel Embiid. But Maxey puts up 35 points, you know, Embiid has a pretty strong showing again, and they still lose in that type of heartbreaking fashion. I saw some things on Twitter from some people from the States that are, you know, Knicks fans, folks, whatever, saying 9 times out of 10, maybe 99 times out of 100 in the history of the Knicks, that's a game they lose in the same way, because that's Knicks basketball. But they come out on top this one. Maybe things are kind of changing for the Knicks. They've been the whipping boy for NBA fans for a long time about the, you know, spending money, bringing guys in. They never make anything quite work. But Sixers in tough after going down a 2-0 at the Garden.
Remember we were talking about with Ashburner when he came on about what would happen, you know, with Philadelphia winning that play-in game, and then, you know, you have to battle New York. And, you know, we asked him about the Knicks. And even in the middle of the season, the Knicks were, you know, around 4, 5, 6 in the seedings, and then really came on at the end. And I said, well, what do you think about this Knicks team? And he said, well, he's not sure. He thinks they're good, but he's not sure that they are a Final Four team. How's that sound?
Well, that's the thing about the NBA, is such a star-driven league, and we see it in the other leagues as well. You know, the NFL, you can't win without a legitimate quarterback. In the NHL, we've kind of seen you need game breakers in the playoffs to carry you to a cup final or even a cup championship. In the NBA, it's 10 times that. You cannot win without a top, whatever, 5-10 player in the league. And the Knicks don't really have that, right? I mean, Jalen Brunson, great player, but I was kind of in the camp that once it was Julius Randle out with injury and unable to play, I kind of thought they didn't really have much of a chance in the playoffs. I thought they might still win a round, depending. This was before the play-in games, play-in seeds were determined, who they matched up with in the first round. And when the Sixers, they got the Sixers, and the way Joel Embiid looked in the play-in game, I kind of thought, yeah, I think the Sixers could probably take care of business here. But credit to the Knicks, they play really hard, and they don't quit on balls, right? It's it's a pretty well-coached team with Tibbs there. So I love what I'm seeing from the Knicks, and I'm rooting for them now. I think they're probably them and, I would say, the Cavs, because I'm a Donovan Mitchell guy. I'm a big fan of his. I would say those are my two teams that I'm rooting for out of the East. Celtics will be tough to topple. And then how can you not like the Nuggets? Jamal Murray, one of the best players in the league as a Canadian. And then likewise down in OKC with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, another great Canadian. So those are probably my two teams in the West.
I thought you were going to say Donovan Paulson for a minute there.
Donovan Paulson.
A big fan of Donovan Paulson.
Line up on the wing for the Cleveland Cavaliers, playing power forward.
Oh, Donnie P. So he's in the mix now. He's full-time 1440, or what's going on there?
He's technically a part-time employee, but he's doing a lot of the behind-the-scenes work with us with our social medias, and we kind of got the YouTube channel launched, and so that's a good chance to plug people to go to Sports 1440 on YouTube. And I mean, hey, who knows down the line, of course, Gregor's show streams live video. That might be where we kind of put some other shows out there, whether it be Fantasy Frenzy streaming live right here from 7 to 11 on the Kevin Carey show. But lots of good social clips and stuff like that from parts of the show when we have guests on video and things like that. So that'll be Donovan's main prerogative, as well as doing some other work in the building here with Stingray and some other stuff, you know, out on the streets.
And we've got exciting news with Stingray and Sports 1440 announcement right now.
It's out.
It's out.
It's the release is out there.
So we're 24/7 sports on Sports 1440. Maybe we'll touch on that release in a bit here. Do you want to go to break? What do you think? Or do you want to just, let's run it. I mean, our listeners are waiting. So we are hooking up with Turn Sports, and Turn Sports is going to take over the 6 to 9 block right here on Sports 1440. It's we're going to do a local and international sports coverage is what we're going to be doing. And they'll be taking a deeper dive into, you know, even basketball, hockey, soccer, but football, cricket, baseball, even more. We've got Navin Ramarak. He'll be hosting the show, and Navin's going to come on with us at 10:40 to discuss what's happening. But to be 24/7, I think when you look at where we came from on Sports 1440, less than 8 months ago, and you know, we were open the doors, let's go, and to see where we are now, to be 24/7 sports radio, I think it's great for our listeners, and I'm hoping that everyone will enjoy that show from 6 to 9. And I think just to be 24/7, it's a neat thing.
It's a big thing for a couple reasons. Of course, kind of switching to a full-time sports talk radio programming. But what this does by changing the 6 to 9 hour from Universal Radio's music program to now this sports program is that if you're abroad in the United States, you can now stream us online, which had been a big issue people were facing, and it was not allowed because of music rights and things crossing the border that way. Now, with music programming kind of quote-unquote out of the fold and full-time sports 24/7, you can stream us with all your regular stuff, iHeart, TuneIn, et cetera, down in the States and elsewhere abroad. So that's another big win for all of our listeners everywhere when they're traveling for work, vacation, whatever. You can catch us all the time. You don't just have to listen back via podcast now, but we always appreciate that too.
Alfred says your station is the best. Cat Dad says, damn, I thought Fantasy Frenzy was going to get another hour, but this is okay, even though it messes with my Bhangra music. We'll have more on that with Nav Ramarak coming up at 10:40. When we come back, our co-host Grant Fuhr will join us from Palm Desert. Before that, time for a Sports 1440 update brought to you by High Street Insurance. And High Street Insurance takes the time to assess your commercial situation, ensuring that you get coverage that's finely tuned to the nuances of your business operations. Check them out, highstreetinsurance.com. Here is the Duke.